market rate, £3,000 a day. Were you signing Lionel Messi?
This is First Minister's Questions. Just once, it would be nice to get a First Minister's answer.
For Douglas Ross to stand there and talk about losing grip of a party when he has been leader, the Conservatives have had the longest attempted coup in Scottish political history.
The Steamy, a laudable production for The Scotsman.
Hello and welcome to The Steamy, The Scotsman's politics podcast. I'm Alistair Grant, The Scotsman's political editor, and I'm joined, as usual, by Rachel Amory, The Scotsman's political correspondent.
Hello.
As usual, we're recording this in the depths of the Scottish Parliament in an empty, echoing committee room just after First Minister's Questions on Thursday, where the Post Office Horizon scandal once again dominated proceedings. Douglas Ross, the Scottish Conservative leader, accusing Humza Yousaf of leaving victims in the dark over their fight for justice. He said the First Minister's position contradicted that set out by the Lord Advocate, Scotland's most senior prosecutor, earlier this week on Tuesday. Humza Yousaf effectively saying that the easiest and quickest route for justice for victims would be for the legislation being brought forward by the UK government to clear the names of those affected to apply in Scotland as well. That could be achieved through a legislative consent motion, an LCM, which effectively sees a devolved government formally agree to allow Westminster to legislate in a devolved area. However, Humza Yousaf acknowledging there are huge complexities around this, to say the least. He's saying that as a contingency measure, the Scottish government has started work on potentially bringing forward its own legislation, albeit the First Minister saying this could be a slower route forward. And just to touch on what the Lord Advocate, Dorothy Bain, was saying to MSPs on Tuesday when she gave her statement to the Scottish Parliament and was questioned by MSPs, and her position seemed to be that there's already an established route for appeals in Scotland and that each case must be considered carefully, which obviously seems to be quite different to an approach for legislating for mass exonerations, which is what Humza Yousaf and Rishi Sunak seem to want. And Douglas Ross very much raising concerns that the Lord Advocate's preferred process could see the wheels of justice turning far, far more slowly. Essentially, this is all getting very complicated,
isn't it,
Rachel?
Very complicated. I think that's probably going to be a big issue going forward, because if you think about in terms of what's happened since the ITV drama came out, it's not been that long. And yet we are so far down that route and we have so many different arms and legs to this problem that it's getting very, very complicated already. So I think the big thing now is don't make it any more complicated, because if you're one of the victims of this scandal, you're probably going to be struggling to understand what's going on right now, particularly because these two statements do sound to be just a little bit different from each other. I don't know if you thought about the Lord Advocate's statement, like her statement on was it Tuesday it was on?
Tuesday, I was off, actually. Yeah,
yes.
You were here watching it.
Yes, and I felt like the statement, she was apologising, which I think was a good thing to have done. However, she was apologising for the failures of the Post Office, not any of the failures of the Crown Office. She was very keen to push any blame away from the Crown Office, saying, you know, it was the Post Office's fault for giving us false information, it was the Post Office's fault for misleading us, etc., etc. Very much wanting to not take any of the blame herself for the Crown Office. I feel like if I was one of the victims, I'd be a bit pissed off about that. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the situation is getting just so tricky. I mean, effectively, the problem is that there's these two separate legal systems, mm-hmm. north and south of the border. Obviously, the Post Office was prosecuting down south, and in Scotland, it was a Crown Office. And there was a sense that the Crown Office had questions to answer, that they had been told in 2013 that there were potential problems with the Horizon system. Mm-hmm. I know, I think I'm right in saying the Lord Advocate had said that at that point, guidance was issued mm-hmm. to prosecutors that effectively you might want to be careful around evidence that relies on Horizon. But prosecutions continued until 2015.
It's another 2 years, exactly.
And there doesn't really seem to be, I mean, certainly from my point of view, I haven't really heard clarity as to why that was the case. I think that the Lord Advocate was basically saying that they'd had reassurances from the Post Office mm-hmm. and that those cases didn't, I think I'm right in saying, didn't necessarily involve evidence that relied on Horizon or, mm-hmm. but it just all seems extremely complicated. And I think one of the points that Douglas Ross was making at First Minister's Questions today, he was bringing up individual examples. I think there's one of them where a lady had been told by the Post Office that effectively the Post Office had tried to put the blame on her grandchildren for taking some of this the kind of losses that her post office branch is experiencing. And she sadly passed away. I think she died in 2018. So even before Alan Bates, you know, the kind of star figure of the ITV drama, had initially had that civil case where they kind of got the admission that some of this had not been done properly. Obviously, there's a real danger now that a lot of these victims of the Post Office Horizon scandal have been waiting an awful long time for justice. Some of them have already died. Mm-hmm. If the wheels of justice continue to turn this slowly, you've got a risk that people will just never see justice done.
I think that's the worry right now. The fact that things are starting to get churned up, things are starting to get complicated. There's a back and forth between Rishi Sunak and Hamza Yousaf and now the Lord Advocate Dorothy Bain. There is a risk at this point that it could start to get very slow and be like trudging through mud, which is not what anybody wants to see at this point.
And what route do you think the Scottish Government will go down? Because I think it's interesting that, I mean, we've got a story in the Scotsman's website at the moment that includes a UK government source effectively pouring cold water on the idea that the Scottish Government could rely on, you know, UK government legislation that is formed to include Scotland, and all they have to do is to have this kind of legislative consent motion. I mean, this source is effectively saying we need to avoid unrealistic expectations that Westminster will simply legislate on Holyrood's behalf. This is a hugely complex area and it might not be possible or the best way forward. And effectively saying that it might be that the most appropriate solution is for the Scottish Government to draw up its own legislation. But Hamza Yousaf today didn't really seem keen on that. I mean, he was very clear that that would be a slower route forward. So we could get into a position where, you know, victims in Scotland are waiting longer mm-hmm. than in England and Wales.
Yes, and I'm pretty sure FMQs today, Hamza Yousaf was also saying that he had written to the UK government and received a letter back, and it sounded all rosy. It sounded like the governments were going to work together. It's all going to work out nicely, which seems to be against what this source is potentially saying. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to see what happens with this.
Yeah, and then that letter was published. You know, we've seen what it actually says now, and it hasn't really committed to anything. Mm-hmm. it's positive in the sense that it's, you know, the UK government, Scottish government saying they want to work together, they want to achieve the same things, everyone wants to see justice done, but it's not making any commitments mm-hmm. that the UK government legislation will at all work for Scotland or include Scotland. Given the separate legal systems, it's just really hard to think about how that would even be done.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Moving on to another issue that Hamza Yousaf was questioned about after FMQs, as he exited the chamber in Holyrood, he was approached by a kind of scrum of journalists keen to ask him about a story that had just been published by the Herald, actually, on the Herald's website, that he had effectively invited the hugely controversial President Erdogan of Turkey to Scotland during a meeting they'd had at COP28. We can probably just play a clip at the moment, actually, of Hamza Yousaf being asked about this.
Well, of course, I said the next time he's in the United Kingdom, why not come up to Scotland? We should. Turkey is a NATO ally. Why would we not wish to have a NATO ally here in Scotland? The UK government regularly engages with Turkey as a NATO ally. It's an important regional player. Why on earth would Scotland not look to seek to engage with a NATO ally and, of course, with somebody we seek to do business and trade with?
So Hamza Yousaf is very much defending that decision. Rachel, you were in the media scrum outside
very squished in that scrum.
The Holyrood Chamber. What do you make of this?
Yes, it's an interesting one. So if you remember back to COP at Dubai, and Hamza Yousaf had met with the Turkish president while he was over there, it didn't go down well at the time, both within the SNP and with the UK government. I mean, the SNP, for example, we had Rosa Sala, one of the Glasgow girls turned SNP councillor for Glasgow City Council. She was saying that she was disgusted by this meeting because of Erdogan's track record with human rights on Kurds. The UK government also wasn't happy. We had Foreign Secretary David Cameron saying, well, threatening to withdraw support to Scottish ministers over the incident because there wasn't a UK government official at this meeting. So that initial meeting itself was quite controversial. We've now today seen details of what actually happened at this meeting, and it's been revealed that he has invited President Erdogan to come to Scotland. And as you heard there, he was asked by journalists why this was, and basically kept repeating, well, Turkey's a NATO ally. So, it's going to be interesting to see what happens on the back of this, but we've had lots of people already sort of commenting, saying this is not a good thing for the government to be doing. I think we've had Ross Grier, a Green MSP, he posted on Twitter, sorry, on X, sorry, very much not happy about it, particularly because of Erdogan's human rights record there.
What was he saying, Ross Grier?
Yeah, so he said, why not invite Erdogan to Scotland because of the ethnic cleansing of the Kurds, bombing of civilians in Syria and Iran, opposition politicians being locked up on nonsense charges, and independent media and human rights groups being shut down.
Pretty strong.
Yes, and adding, we wouldn't roll out the red carpet for Putin or Netanyahu. So it's quite a strong statement there from Ross Grier. We've also had the Conservatives sort of questioning, you know, you need to clear up why this meeting has been offered and what happened in the meeting that was had in Dubai as well. So it's definitely raised a few eyebrows, this one.
Yeah, and this was obviously only released following a Freedom of Information request, which gave a kind of readout of what was discussed at that meeting. We wouldn't even know about this if it wasn't for that FOI request.
It is quite sort of vague details as well. It's one page
of
bullet
redacted.
Points.
Yeah.
Some of it's redacted. It's one page of bullet points. And a lot of it was focused, from what we see from this response, a lot of the discussions that the two had was on the war in the Israel-Hamas war. And we know that Hamza Yusuf's wife, Nadia El Nakla, met with the Turkish president's wife as well in Turkey at a summit for spouses of leaders on Gaza. So we know this is something that the two sort of families have spoken about before. He was asked by one of the journalists, you know, was this meeting, did it have anything to do with trying to get Hamza Yusuf's in-laws out of Gaza? If you remember back when the war first broke out, they were trapped in there for quite a long time.
Yeah, which Turkey facilitated some of those exits.
And he just said no, straight up said no. No further comment on it or any sort of further explanation, just said no and then turned on to the next journalist. So very much keen to put to bed that idea anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting when he was asked something like, you know, if he came to Scotland, would you bring up human rights abuses? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, yes, it's something we would talk about. But he said something like, you know, everyone is on a human rights journey or something like that.
Yeah,
it was a strange way to phrase it.
It was a very, very strange way to put it. And didn't sort of explicitly say Turkey has a bad human rights record.
Almost quite equivocal.
Like it was a bit sort of, yeah, it's a bit of a strange way to put it, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming, I don't know if the Foreign Office have commented on this yet, the UK Foreign Office.
We have asked for a comment at time of recording this podcast. We haven't got that comment yet, but hopefully by the time you're listening to this podcast, you can see it on our website, hopefully.
But I'm assuming they will not be happy about this behind the scenes, given the controversy that already existed over the Scottish Government having these meetings with, you know, no UK officials present. As you say, David Cameron had kind of issued that threat that they would withdraw kind of Foreign Office cooperation with the Scottish Government.
And not the first time that Hamza Yusuf's got in trouble with the Foreign Office on this. If you remember back in August, he got into trouble from James Cleverley, the former Foreign Secretary, for meeting the Icelandic Prime Minister, Katrin Jakobsdóttir. So he has got in trouble with this before.
Yeah, so it's an issue that was already controversial, and I think this will just kind of add to that sense of brewing controversy within the kind of relations between the UK government and the Scottish government. Speaking of the UK government, it's time to hear from our Westminster correspondent, Alexander Brown, with all the latest goings-on down south, including the ongoing, never-ending row over Rwanda.
Hello and welcome to the Westminster Sections podcast. My name is Alexander Brown, and if you were just to look at the headlines, this would seem like a good week for Rishi Sunak. The Prime Minister's controversial Rwanda bill passed at a third reading, and despite much talk from the Tory rebels, including those who quit their jobs, when it came down to it, they were not willing to vote against the government and either abstained or supported the bill, which is quite interesting. You know, 2 weeks prior, you had Jacob Rees-Mogg saying, this bill will never work. And then he voted for it because ultimately this is about power and influence rather than the real impact of the bill. So it's a win. This is a good week for the Prime Minister, or so it would seem, until you look at the polling and you realise this is just the first of several obstacles. So firstly, we have the polling, which shows the Prime Minister is now less popular than Liz Truss was before she was forced out of office in disgrace. The Conservatives are on about 20%, which is a historic low. And the idea that he will in any way have a chance of winning the next election now seems laughable. As if that wasn't enough, while he has won, letters of no confidence are going from Tory MPs. He gave a press conference on Thursday where he said how the Lords would have to do the right thing, and they must support him, and the party was united, which to the casual viewer, you might go, oh, fair enough. But actually, none of that is true. The party is not united. Letters have no confidence of going in. And the whole reason you had the press conference is because if the Lords amend his bill at all, which they probably will, MPs will then vote against it. So it's very much out of the frying pan and into the fire. This is not light at the end of the tunnel for Mr. Sunak. If anything, he has dug deeper with a policy that many, including his own cabinet ministers, still think will bring him down. To see if that happens next week, stay tuned to thescotsman.com. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks, Alex. And that's all we've got time for. In the meantime, please remember to sign up to the Steamy, the Scotsman's politics newsletter.
Oh, please do, yes.
It lands in your inbox every weekday, is that right?
Every weekday morning, while you're having your breakfast, you can read about what's the top story of the day is, what to look out for in that day in politics as well, and a sort of a brief overview of what's in the paper that day, including what our commentators are saying as well.
You can join thousands of others who have signed up to that newsletter, getting the kind of rundown on all that's going on in Scottish politics. It's a kind of essential way to start your day, I would say, if you care about politics. But until then, thanks very much.